Art Bell's Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from January 13th, 2000.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening and or good morning, wherever you may be across this great land of ours. And it is a great land indeed. From the Hawaiian and Tahitian Islands out west, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north all the way to the frigid but somewhat melting pole. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Art Bell. Back from New York City, and I'll tell you all about it. It was a wild trip, there is no doubt about it. And a bunch of stuff happened, so I'll try and give you as much as I can. Now, I do have photographs, but it was a pretty tired day today, needless to say, after getting back from a trip like that. And so it's going to be tomorrow until I get them up. I have both digital and 35 millimeter, and the 35s are going to be ready tomorrow. And so we'll get the photographs of the trip up tomorrow. But a lot of things happened, beginning with about a one-hour interview on WABC on Sean Hannity's show on WABC in New York, which was, you cannot imagine how cool for me, because as you know, I grew up with WABC in New York. And so meeting everybody there, Phil Boyce, Sean, Curtis. Yes, the trip to New York began with a one-hour interview on Sean Hannity's show, and about halfway through that interview, they brought Curtis, the Antichrist follower, into the room. And so we had something of a discussion, and fortunately, WABC has streaming audio on the net. Somebody alerted Keith that it was going on, and about 5 minutes into the one-hour interview, Keith began to record the interview for posterity, and we have it up on my website now. And it did get pretty interesting, I'll tell you. So that was a lot of fun. That began it all at WABC in New York, and it was such a thrill. And I got a lot of really, really interesting photographs. In fact, let me tell you about one that I am going to put up that is inexplicable, or somebody needs to do some talking about how this photograph was possible. I got a wonderful tour of WABC, and I saw the studio from which Rush broadcasts, and it was majestic, as you would expect it would be. And there are a couple of things that I want to mention about it. Number one, you had this wonderful console and desk that Rush sits at, and behind that there was the American flag, if I'm recalling correctly, and a big sort of presidential-like picture of Rush. That's the only way I could describe it, presidential. You know, he looked presidential. Well, maybe he will be president someday. Anyway, off to the right of all of that, but not by far, there was standing 4, if not 5 feet high, a large alien gray. It was like a mannequin of there is no other way to put it, of a large alien gray. Now, this was in Rush Limbaugh's studio, and so I went, what? What? What's this doing here? And I whipped out a camera and took a couple of photographs. Now, you know, I like to document stuff to bring it back and share it with you, so I took photographs of the whole scene. I stood there between the photograph, the presidential-like photograph of Rush, his control board, and the alien gray, and I took a photograph, and I'll get that up there tomorrow night, for those of you who disbelieve. Along with a lot of others. Now, it was a really busy trip. And, of course, it included, well, to give you an idea, there's a lot of things you don't know about. For example, I did, I think, 14 or 15 interviews in separate cities around the country. And that was an interesting process where you sit there, to give you a behind-the-scenes look at how it happens. You're sitting there, but Whitley and myself were sitting there with a light, a couple of lights blazing in our eyes, and a camera in the center, you know, about 3 or 4 feet, 4 feet, say, away from our faces. And then you give interviews to various anchor people around the country, and, you know, Chicago and Los Angeles and San Francisco and Atlanta and all the big cities around the country. And you do interview after interview after interview after interview, and it was really interesting. I've never done such a process before. It's called a satellite tour. And it is mind-racking because you're going through the same things kind of again and again and again. And basically, you're telling the same story again and again and again. But it was neat. It really was kind of fun. So we had the satellite tour. It was a big tour. Then, then we had an interview on the Today Show. Now, chronologically, this is not all necessarily in correct order. And Matt Lauer interviewed us on the Today Show. And Matt, for whatever reason, decided to make it a kind of a contentious interview, which I thought was okay. If that's what he wanted to do. And it was kind of contentious, so I hope you managed to catch it. It was interesting, I thought. Very interesting, and kind of neat also. And afterward, got to meet Katie Couric. She came up and shook hands, and everybody else on the Today show set was very nice. But for some reason, Matt decided to make it fairly contentious interview, and that was okay. You can view it for yourself and decide how it was handled, so I hope you got to see that. I don't know, Keith may or may not have audio for that on the website as well. And then something very interesting. Oh, we had a wonderful book signing at Barnes & Noble, a Rockefeller Center, Barnes & Noble. Really neat. Thank you for all those hundreds who showed up at Barnes & Noble. It was great. They only had it scheduled for a certain amount of time, so it got shut off. But it was great and met a lot of really neat people there. Then we went to Fox. Now, this is a really interesting story. We were to do an interview, which had to be originated, I think, at the Fox, you know, main studios in Manhattan. And this really was interesting. I mean, we went upstairs, and you're greeted by, you know, there's a receptionist, and then if you've ever seen it, CNN shows it all the time. CNN shows their main control room. You know, when you see a picture with all the computers and all the people sitting at their little desks doing their jobs and monitoring the news and getting incoming wire stories and, you know, whatever you do in a gigantic newsroom like Fox or CNN or whatever. CNN shows it all the time. So I thought that the Fox studio, main control room anyway, was really interesting. It really looked cool. I mean, there was just so much there. And so as we stood by the receptionist, I had my wife take a couple of photographs of me standing in front of the Fox stuff so you all could see it. And the receptionist said, "No photographs! Put those cameras away! No photographs!" I said, "What?" "Policy, no photographs." So I thought, huh. And I looked back there again, trying to see if there was something secret about this really well-assembled control room, and I saw no secrets. But I'm you know, I'm a very, I pay attention to rules, and so for whatever reason they had their rule and no photographs. Okay, so I put away all the cameras. I said, okay, put them all back into the, zipped them up into the bag and said, okay. And I turned around, and the same lady said, no photographs. You can't take any photographs. I said, yes, ma'am. You just told me that. Don't worry about it. I'm not taking any anymore. And so then we went to the makeup place. You know, they, oh, my God. Through that entire series of all the, I don't know, 16, 17 interviews, whatever, I must have had 2 pounds of makeup on my face, and that stuff drives me nutty. Makes me break out after a while. I don't know. I have no idea how women can wear makeup. No idea. Anyway, we came back from makeup, and we're ready to go on the air. And this time, as I go in, the lady and somebody else both say, no photographs. You cannot take any pictures. I turn around and I said, hey, folks, aren't you in the picture business? I said, you know, it's like I heard you the first 2 times, and you must have noticed I put away my cameras and I'm not taking any photographs. I said, you're in the picture business, aren't you? I said, I'll tell you what, let's do a trade-off. No photographs, no photographs. And so I didn't do that interview, and I walked right out of there. Flat ass, and that's what I mean, flat ass. I'll just say it. Flat ass walked out of there. I said, fine, no photographs, arrivederci. So I left. The first time was fine, the second time was annoying, the third time was absolutely ridiculous. I have no idea why people there have an attitude like that. No idea at all. Just really nasty. But otherwise, the New York trip was really, really cool. And what I would have to say about Manhattan is, and oh, but one more thing. Assuming that they turn out, I will take the forbidden photographs and post them on my website so you can see what terrible, now I don't know they're going to turn out, but we'll find out tomorrow, so you can see what terrible secrets they must have revealed somewhere in some detail that I didn't see in that control room. See, but I did get 2 photographs before they told me not to. So we'll see. Well, if, you know, if they come out, I'll put up the forbidden photographs along with a lot of others. All right, we're going to take a break here, do a little bit of biz, and be right back. All right, what's going on in the world? Not a lot. Nightline interviewed the father of the Cuban boy, who... we have no idea, of course, now whether he's going back to Cuba, whether the court, who has been alleged to have some sort of a bias in this case that held up his return to Cuba, will prevail, or whether Janet Reno says she will not change her mind. I frankly think she's right. I didn't see the father on Nightline. Matter of fact, I don't even think it's aired out here yet. But I have always sort of thought that the Democrats in this case, Janet Reno and the administration, made the right decision to send the boy back. It is, after all, his father. Tough decision, I know. But he is the father, and as long as his heart is in the right place, it seems to me that it has always been our policy, and always should be our policy, to not break up families. That's all. But I think the Democrats have made a very painful decision, because I would bet you almost anything it's going to cost them big in Florida. I mean, they just like tossed the Cuban vote right out the window. One of the youngest murderers in U.S. history, a boy who shot a stranger at 11, was spared life in prison today and sent away to juvenile detention, until he becomes 21. And he was actually tried as an adult, and the court, the judge said that the decision to try him as an adult was fundamentally flawed, his words. So that's the way that came out. We've got our first cloned monkey. Did you hear about, I'm sure you did. Researchers using a technique called embryo splitting are going to grow genetically identical rhesus monkeys in the lab. And if they can do that with monkeys, they can do that with people. The technology, of course, as you know, it absolutely exists to do that now with people. Dr. White, is it Dr. White? Might be. A doctor in Chicago, I might be confusing the name White with another Dr. White, says he will clone a human somewhere in some lab deep down below the earth, or hidden away in a more obvious place. I think it's already been done. I think a human being has already been cloned. They just have not told us. Hey, guess what? The Y2K bug? Well, it seems like it took a bigger bite out of America's intelligence capabilities than previously reported. Now, I'm reading you Associated Press here. Just broke. The Chicago Tribune says spy satellites were, listen to this, all but blanked and blinded by a Y2K computer bug for nearly 3 days. According to the newspaper, nearly the entire system of high-accuracy optical and radar spy satellites was either out of service or operating way below capacity for most of the New Year's holiday weekend. See, they always tell you about these things much later. You may remember on New Year's Eve, they had a sort of a thing where they had a report about a problem with an intelligent satellite. Remember that? And then the story died like a lead balloon dropped into a river. Boom! Died. But they did, at the very beginning, now apparently it was a much bigger problem than they told us. All right. We'll pause right here and be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from January 13th, 2000.
He took 100 pounds of clay, and then he said, "Hey, listen, I'm gonna fix this world today, because I know what's missing." Then he rolled his big sleeves up, and a brand new world began. He created a woman and a lots of loving for a man. Whoa, yes he did. With just 100 pounds of clay, he made my life worth living, and I will thank him every day for every kiss you're giving. And I'll thank him every night for the arms that are holding me tight. And he did it all with just 100 pounds of clay. Yes, he did. Oh, yes, he did.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from January 13th, 2000.
So, tomorrow night, the forbidden photographs. Maybe some of you pixel people out there can decipher the forbidden photographs. I'll try and do them high res if they come out. And tell us what the big secret is. What the reason is that you couldn't photograph the office of Fox in New York. The secret office of Fox in New York. I mean, what was it? Gum under the desks? What? God, that was funny. Anyway, we've got a little more work to do here, and then I've got something that will just scare the, you know what, out of you about Russia. You heard about our problems with Y2K. Apparently all weekend long we were somewhat blind, intelligence-wise. Blind, can you believe that? Of all the problems where you wouldn't expect Y2K to manifest itself, you would think that our ability to look at the other guy's nuclear weapons, you know, would be high on the list of things that you would get taken care of. But now we find out over the whole week. They always tell you this later. Always later. But virtually the whole weekend we were blind. But if you think that's bad, listen to what I'm about to tell you in a moment about Russia. So I told you that we were virtually blind all weekend long, something they report to us now after it's over. Our own spy satellite system. Interesting enough, but listen to this. Again, Associated Press, in case you want to check it. Let me read you this. Russia's early warning system is now so decayed that Moscow is unable to detect United States intercontinental ballistic missile launches for at least 7 hours a day, according to U.S. officials and experts. Russia could no longer spot missiles fired from U.S. submarines at all, they said. At most, only 4 of Russia's 21 early warning satellites were still working. Now, that would mean that Russian commanders have no more than 17 hours and perhaps as little as 12 days of daily coverage of the 550 nuclear-tipped ICBM silos in Colorado, Montana, Nebraska, North Dakota, and Wyoming. Against submarines, they basically have no warning. Now, why is this dangerous? It's dangerous because the entire logic of nuclear deterrence requires both sides to launch their missiles before a surprise attack obliterates them. Right? Isn't that what the whole mad principle was? Mutual assured destruction? Now, the fear is that in the heat of a serious crisis, Russian military and civilian leaders could misread a non-threatening rocket launch of some sort, or ambiguous data, as a nuclear first strike and launch a salvo at the U.S. and Western Europe. This is really, really dangerous. You might think, cool. You know, it's kind of cool because they can't, we can see them, that is, on other than Y2K days, I guess, but they can't see us. Well, it's not so cool that they can't see us. It's kind of a dangerous situation. And I thought you should know about it. It goes on, but basically I just gave you the genesis of this entire thing. You think about that a little bit. Hours and hours every day, the Russians cannot see whether or not we have launched ICBMs against them. And with respect to the most important part of our triad, in my view, our submarines, they have no warning, zero. None. This is an extremely, extremely dangerous situation. God, it's dangerous. Anyway, listen, at the top of the hour, Linda Moulton Howe will be here, and she will expand upon a report she did on Sunday with regard to global warming, with regard to sudden climate change, with regard to what's going on all around us right now. Finally got cold in New York day after I left. It got cold. even snowed, I understand. Got a little snow in Manhattan. But it sure was pretty when I was there. I went to the top of the Empire State. I got some beautiful photographs, and hopefully they all come out well. And I'll get those on the web for you, too. It was really cool because we went to the top of the Empire State on a day when a front had come through, and it just blew the air absolutely pristinely clean. And so the view, normally pretty obscured from the top of that giant building, was astounding. I mean, one of the best days of the year. And I took some 35s, and I'll have those for you tomorrow, too, hopefully. West of the Rockies, you are on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a radiation alert.
Of what kind?
The whole Earth.
For all of us?
Yes. Sounds Yesterday serious. And today, the radiation from neutrino annihilations is so high that you can actually feel the heat being generated.
Now, are you referring to radiation from the sun?
No, I'm talking about neutrinos that are coming from a hypernova.
What hypernova?
A very big explosion in space.
Where?
More than 1 billion light years out.
Hmm.
And we're experiencing a very high neutrino intensity yesterday and today.
Uh-huh, and
And it's so high that the annihilations are occurring inside of bodies.
Oh, my God. Do you realize how annihilated I am? Because I was flying yesterday. You did say yesterday, right?
Yes.
Well, I was flying, imagine this, at, I think, 33,000 feet yesterday. So I must be totally annihilated.
Well, ask your callers.
Thanks a lot. So, in other words, you're saying people can actually feel the heat of the annihilations.
It's not everybody that can feel it. You have to have silicon deposits in your body to feel the heat.
What kind of silicon deposits?
Well, silica from glass. Some of it leaches out into your body.
Well, I don't eat glass that frequently, so.
No, I mean, if you drink out of glass containers,
I see. So a little bit of silica rubs off in whatever liquid is in the glass.
Yes.
I got you. All right, well, total bummer. I must be really annihilated. I think that fellow's called before. And we have, in fact, been hit by radiation from supernovas and other explosions that have occurred light years away. But yesterday and today, huh? Damn. You just know I got creamed up there. International Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. How you doing?
Okay.
Welcome back.
Wait a minute. I have echo. All right. Thank you. It's good to be back.
Okay. Yes. And Riley did a great job while you were gone.
So I've heard. Yes. Thank you, Rolly James.
Yes. A couple of weeks ago you had, by the way, I'm Larry from Sudbury, Ontario, just north of Toronto.
Oh, north of Toronto, okay.
Yeah, I listen to you on several different stations, Cleveland, and sometimes I get you out of Toronto. I actually get you better on the Cleveland station than...
Some night you might, just for fun, go bottom of the dial to the top of the dial and tell me how many you can hear it on.
Three different stations I get you. I can't recall offhand.
No, I'm talking about listening really carefully. In other words, put it on a frequency where you might hear several stations and listen really carefully and see if you can't determine it's this program. And then let me know how many.
All right. The other one I hear you sometimes is in London, Ontario.
Right.
Okay. A couple of weeks ago you had on John Hogue.
Oh, yes.
And he said something that gave me an idea. He was talking about the virgin birth.
Yes.
And, well, let's accept as truth, just for the sake of this discussion, that, there are some aliens out there who are shepherding us or looking after us or manipulating our DNA or whatever.
All right. Let's say there are.
Just for the sake of this.
Sure.
How about if Mary was abducted and artificially inseminated.
Impregnated. Right.
Impregnated. Mm-hmm. And these aliens, let's assume that they had good intentions, if they were aliens, in fact, were simply trying to create a better human being. One who was more honest, more forthright, more solid being. So they wanted a woman who was absolutely pure in spirit and in the physical, not in a moral sense. But
well, if that's the best that alien DNA technology can do, then we're doomed.
No, but maybe that was
doomed. I mean, look at our own president, for example. I mean, you're talking about DNA improvements to get to ethical, moral, well-behaved people. That's what they've done for us with their DNA manipulation.
Well, maybe they're
they've
not
screwed us
yet.
Up big time.
Maybe that's just a step along the way.
Huh.
It's just an idea.
Well, maybe that's why all the saucers are still around.
Maybe they have to do it again.
That's right.
Just an idea. I find it intriguing.
Yeah. Messed around with chromosome 21 when they meant to get 22. I appreciate the call, sir.
Thank you.
You take care. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art. Welcome back.
Thank you.
This is John in Atlanta.
Hi, John.
Got a question and a request for a particular guest that you might like to have on
sure.
your show. You read an article a couple weeks ago about the sun's solar wind ceasing for a period of time, and I looked all over the Internet.
Flat stopped.
Where can I find that information on the Internet? I've looked at the NASA, SOHO websites. I can't find that anywhere.
Go to a newspaper website that carries the Associated Press and do a search on solar winds or solar wind, and you will find it quite quickly. It was a wire service story.
Okay, thank you. And the guest, a guy that was on your affiliate here in Atlanta a few months back, had just written a book called Not by Fire, but by Ice.
That's right. Oh, I've interviewed him.
You have Robert Felix? Robert W. Felix?
I don't think that's who it is.
Maybe there's two titles out there.
Yeah, that may be.
Well, I would think that you would find a lot of the information in his book.
A lot of commonality. In other words...
oh, yeah.
Yes, oh, sure. The coming ice age. No question about it.
He's convinced that within the next 20 years, and it will happen overnight.
Yeah, well, that's the contention of my book.
Yep.
The coming global superstorm that will occur overnight. You see that this global warming thing sort of creeps and creeps and creeps like a rubber band stretching, and then, boom, all of a sudden it snaps and we get a climate change. And, you know, we know that's occurred before.
Yeah,
as I've said on the various interviews, we've got the woolly mammoths with the green stuff in their mouths. Now, they were instantly frozen and in their bellies, undigested. So they obviously were instantly frozen. The only other possible explanation scientists try to give, because they can't explain it, is, well, they must have fallen down in some sort of giant ice crack or something. But that doesn't explain, A, how the green stuff was growing on the ice. And it doesn't explain why there were not broken bones in the woolly mammoth's body. It didn't fall down. It got frozen instantly. Otherwise, there's no way in hell that green stuff could still be viable.
Yeah, I tuned in about 10 minutes into the interview, and he was talking about, he said, imagine back-to-back storms like Hurricane Mitch hitting an Arctic front realizing that an inch of precipitation when it's frozen creates a foot of snow, and realizing that Hurricane Mitch dropped 40 inches of precipitation in some parts of Honduras.
Yep.
Imagine that happening. What would it create? And it's a pretty scary scenario. I haven't read your book yet. I'm about into the second chapter.
You will find so much synchronicity in what you just said and our book that you call me when you're done.
Okay.
All right?
Something else real quick. I just got the latest issue of Astronomy Magazine, and there's an article in there that talked about the Little Ice Age that happened back in the, I believe, 15th and 16th century.
Yes.
And so I don't know if you know about it, but, you know, they've kept records of sunspots for, like, hundreds of years, especially the Chinese. And they found out that during that period, the last several decades of the 15th century, that...
Hurry now, I got to go.
Okay.
All right. I appreciate it, sir. Thank you very much. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Linda Moulton Howe up next.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from January 13th, 2000. Presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired January 13th, 2000.
Good morning, everybody. As you well know, I'm sure, I have a new book out called The Coming Global Superstorm. And really, the superstorm is about sudden climate change. Whether it would be the worst-case scenario as described in the superstorm, and that is worst-case scenario, believe me, or it would be something even lesser than that. We know, archaeologically, we know this has happened before. Sudden climate change. And the theory is that the climate just gets warmer and warmer with gases in the atmosphere until finally, like a rubber band stretched all the way out, and it can't go any further, boom, it snaps back. It's like Mother Nature's hitting a reset button on a computer. And all of a sudden, you get a new ice age. A very violent, very quick new ice age. Now, our science reporter over many years now, Linda Moulton Howe, is here tonight in a moment. And she knows, and you know, if you've been listening, how much frustration I've had about this whole weather change, because I know it's underway. No question about it. But there are forces aligned against the science. They don't want to hear about it. They don't want to know about it because it would mean things would have to change. They definitely have to change. And so I guess their attitude is head in the sand. I don't know. But it's getting a little obvious out there for all of the people like you who have no further than your window to look to see the weather is not what it was. The violent storms we're having, the 40% ice melt at the Arctic because we had a cold war and we didn't want to. Did you know that's why we didn't find out about that 40% ice melt? The ice has actually, over the last couple of decades, melted about 40% at the Arctic, the thickness of it. So, in other words, the volume of it. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, that our shores are going to suddenly be inundated with water because it was already displaced. But the fact that our polar ice is melting and ice is slipping away in the Antarctica, these things really mean something. Despite the myopically, politically motivated people who say it is meaningless, it's not. It's extremely meaningful to all of us. And I think in the near term, and here to talk about it in a few moments, is Linda Moulton Howe. All right. Now, Washington Associated Press. This one just dropped today. While still uncertain about the long-term trend, a panel of scientists now says there is no question the warming of the Earth, underway for a century, listen carefully now, has accelerated during the past 20 years. The warming trend in global mean surface temperatures over the past two decades, quote, is undoubtedly real, substantially greater than the average rate of warming during the 20th century. This is according to an 11-member panel of the National Academy of Sciences. And it is but the latest, along with a letter from the top U.S. meteorologist and the top British meteorologist saying global warming is now accelerating at a very rapid rate indeed. Unprecedented letter, and still those who wish to politically ignore the reality of this continue to do so at the cost of your life, perhaps ultimately in that of your children. Here with so much more on all of this is the gal who's been doing science reports now for Coast and Dreamland for years. She has won any number of prizes for her environmental reports. And she's got just all kinds of credits and books published, and she's got a website, and she'll tell you about all of that. But here is Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, welcome.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Well, this month at the American Geophysical Union meeting in San Francisco, data was presented from the past 30 years that indicate the pattern of winds that encircle the Arctic are staying confined more than normal to a smaller circle around the North Pole. The result is that frigid polar air has not been moving as far south during the Northern Hemisphere winters. And so what happens when warmer than usual air in the lower latitudes clashes with much colder polar air? Winters could become warmer overall, but storms could be much wetter with fiercer winds in some areas across western North America and western Europe, while other regions will become unusually dry as moisture is sucked from the air by stronger high-altitude winds. And in fact, Spain now has been suffering drought, while northern Europe has been socked by wind and rain.
Wind and rain, they've had 300 million trees down in France alone.
Yeah, this is what I was just going to say. There have been three massive storms with high winds that have swept across England and Europe in December, and two of those storms, exactly as you said, knocked down 300 million trees in France alone, and 10,000 were uprooted at the Palace of Versailles, including 200-year-old cedars.
So people have an idea of scale. That's one-third of all the trees in France.
Yes. In this one blow-by-blow, two storms back-to-back. No one disputes the polar wind shift data, but as always, there is argument about whether it's a result of a natural perturbation in the Earth's climate cycles or directly linked to human-produced greenhouse gases that have been pouring into the atmosphere from industries since the 1970s. But scientists reported that if winters continue to be more warm than normal, quote, it would be enough to convince most scientists that the changes are human-induced, that they are not going to go away, and that they may be an indicator of even bigger changes to come, unquote. And here are some recent global warming facts. 1998 was the warmest year on record globally. 1999 was the second warmest year on record for both the United States and England. The Earth warmed 1 degree Fahrenheit between 1900 and 2000. The Earth is projected to get 2 to 6 degrees Fahrenheit warmer by 2100. Ocean levels rose 4 to 10 inches between 1900 and 2000. Ocean levels will rise at least 18 to possibly 36 inches higher by 2100.
Oh, my, my.
In December, various scientific reports confirmed that 40% of the Arctic North Pole ice has melted in the past 30 years. That ice melt is diluting some Atlantic Ocean currents, which could end up affecting the North Atlantic Drift, which brings warm water from the tropics to the British Isles and Europe. The strange possibility exists that in a steadily warming world, Europe could become cooler. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, known as NOAA, and the United Kingdom Meteorological Office in London recently issued a joint alert about global warming trends, which was reprinted January 6th in USA Today. The official letter states, quote, the rapid rate of warming since 1976 of 0.35 degrees Fahrenheit per decade is consistent with the projected rate of warming based on human-induced effects.
Linda, one thing that so many in the audience don't understand, maybe you can make it simple, is why global warming, and they get that fixed in their mind, a little bit warmer all the time, ultimately would cause cold. They can't figure that out.
It has to do with the relationship between air and water. When air becomes warmer, it can absorb and hold more water. And when you have more water in warmer air, the rain can be drenching. Some areas will be much drier. And in fact, you can have greater snow. But why would Europe get cooler? That has to do with the fact that the North Atlantic Drift, for as long as humankind has had civilization, it has brought warm water from the tropics up to the England and Europe area in latitudes that are like Upper Canada and Southern Siberia.
Sure.
And that's why that's warmer. And if anything happens to change that North Atlantic drift, then there is the possibility that Europe could become cooler. No one knows for certain, but there are signs of things happening. And this is part of the reason why the NOAA and the UK Meteorological Office put together this extraordinary, unprecedented letter, and they say, in fact, scientists now say they cannot explain this unusual warmth that has been happening at 0.35 degrees Fahrenheit per decade without including the effects of both human-generated greenhouse gases and aerosols. The critical point is that we continue to see confirmation of the long-term warming trend and that our climate is now changing rapidly. Our new data and understanding now point to the critical situation we face. To slow future change, we must take action soon. At the same time, because of our past and ongoing activities, we must learn to live with the likely consequences of more extreme weather, rising sea levels, changing precipitation patterns, ecological and agricultural dislocations, and the increased spread of human disease, unquote.
That's what I think we're going to have to do, Linda. I'm pretty pragmatic about this. And, you know, on the one hand, yeah, you know, maybe if we suddenly stopped emitting greenhouse gases and stopped thinning the ozone and all the rest of it, maybe it would change something. But I'm not even convinced of that. I think there are large natural cycles and that we are now exacerbating that with human activity, and I'm pretty pragmatic about this, Linda. People are not going to give up their cars, That's all there is to it. In fact, in the rest of the world, they want cars.
Well,
you know.
Last week I talked with Dr. James Baker, administrator of NOAA in Washington, D.C., who was the co-signer on that letter with Peter Ewens, who is the CEO of the United Kingdom Meteorological Office in London.
You bet.
And he talked to me about what provoked his joint statement with Peter Ewens.
Good.
And here is Dr. Baker, and if we have to go in to the break at the bottom, we'll just continue when we come back out.
Oh, I really want to hear this. Go
ahead. Okay. Here is Dr. Baker.
This is the letter I told you about, everybody, one of the authors.
The precipitating thing was the release of the temperature records for 1999, because we found that globally it was the fifth warmest year on record, and in fact for the U.S. the second warmest, and it was a similar thing for the United Kingdom. And we felt, both Peter Ewens and I felt, that this was significant both in terms of the fact that the temperature has been warming throughout the last 20 years at a rate which is fully consistent with what the global warming theories say. So we thought it was an important point to make.
And with these three recent storms in December across Europe, the last two being the strongest and doing so much damage, especially in Paris, it seems consistent with a great deal of reading that I have done from NOAA and GIST in New York about greater instability in the upper stratospheric temperatures being colder, the lower temperatures being warmer, setting up greater instability in the atmosphere and the potential for greater energy in storms. Would you place these three recent European storms in that category?
Well, there certainly was a lot of instability, as you say, in the in that storm. It was a very powerful one. I think the last time we saw something like that was, I think, 1988, when there was a big storm that hit England. And there were two storms that hit France, very concentrated and very strong. You know, you can never ascribe any one storm to global warming, because that's a gradual change. But there's no question that you expect to see a world where it is stormier, wetter, and drier. All the extremes get stronger when you go into this world where there's more energy being absorbed by this increased greenhouse gases.
Well, it's my understanding that the amount of carbon dioxide, if you just take one greenhouse gas, that is going into the atmosphere, is at a level that even if we stopped all industrial production now, that over the next 100 years, there would continue to be an increase in global temperature, perhaps as much as 6 degrees Fahrenheit in the next 100 years.
There's no question that the greenhouse gases are there, that they're going to increase, and even if we started action now, it takes a long time for them to come out. They have a residence time of about 300 years in the atmosphere, so it's going to take a long time. So we really have to do two things. One is we're going to have to learn to live with the world that has a different climate than we have today, and we're going to have to learn how to be more energy efficient.
Well, one of the criticisms has been that this particular administration has not been aggressive in leading the way in terms of reducing greenhouse gases enough in terms of the industrialized world. That was the main criticism at the Kyoto conference.
Well, there's no question that the United States right now is the major emitter, and there are a lot of things that we can do. The administration has proposed a number of things that might be done through the Energy Department. We've proposed BTU taxes, a variety of things that might have an impact, but the Congress has, in fact, refused to act on any of these, and I think it's partly because the Congress is reflecting a public view that this is less of a problem than it really is. I think this is a real issue. We need to get the American public aware that this is a serious issue for all of us and that we need to do something about it.
With NOAA looking into this next year and into this new decade, are you expecting there to be increasing numbers of tornadoes and hurricanes with more and more energy in them?
We have definitely seen more tornadoes in the last couple of years. That's a fact. Whether that's a global warming effect or not, it's hard to say. But the hurricanes, you know, we saw more tropical storms in the last 5 years than we have seen at any time in recorded history. We're definitely on the upswing in terms of numbers of tropical storms, and we've seen some very, very strong ones. In fact, this past year we got more strong hurricanes than we have seen in a very long time. And it is also true that as you add these greenhouse gases and you put more energy in the environment, that feeds the energy of these things. So it's something that where the two things go together. We expect to see for this coming year an above average number of hurricanes, certainly, and possibly of other kinds of storms.
And if the energy systems increase with greater instability in a global warming atmosphere, isn't the time approaching when insurance companies are going to say, maybe first to all coastal residences, we cannot afford to insure anymore? And doesn't this then make this a really huge political priority for people in Congress?
Well, it should. There's no question that the insurance companies are very concerned. The losses due to weather-related disasters have been rapidly rising. You have more people living on the coast. You've got more expensive homes. And so this is something where the insurance companies are vulnerable.
All right, we're gonna hold it right there. You bet they are, and I had not thought of that aspect of it. But the insurance companies must be following this whole global warming thing very, very closely and get very, very nervous. We had a hurricane last year the size of Texas. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from January 13th, 2000.
And then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. To have all these things in our memories all, and they use them to help us.
Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from January 13th, 2000.
It certainly is. Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. Linda Moulton Howe is here, and we're talking about our changing climate. And our climate is changing. I think there is no longer any question about that. The threshold of belief for that was, for me, passed a long, long time ago, and we'll get right back to it. again, one of the authors of that letter, the letter of the chief U.S. meteorologist and the chief British meteorologist, is in the middle of an interview with Linda Moulton Howe right now, and we're about to continue that interview. But, you know, it was kind of interesting, Linda. I did an interview on the Today Show talking about precisely, I mean, exactly what you're talking about right now in the interview. And they got really, Matt Lauer at NBC got really, really contentious with us and turned around and said to Whitley, are you a meteorologist? Are you a climatologist? Said same thing to me. Are you? I said, no. Like, you know, if you're not, then what are you here talking to us about it for? Of course, obviously, we've interviewed such people, the kind of person you're interviewing right now, but that's it. They get, when they hear this, they get incredibly contentious, like, who are you to say this?
And that's been the politically acceptable point of view of the media and so many people up until now, and I think that's what is so very significant about the fact that Dr. James Baker, head of NOAA, and his colleague in London,
sure,
would jointly sign and release a letter with the full intent of trying to make people aware that this is past the political discussion stage.
Yeah, but what it does is it makes them angry. Not only that, but you say past the political discussion stage. Listen to the presidential debates. When have they brought up this subject so far?
Exactly, and that is true. I do not understand why Al Gore, for example, who has championed global warming as a fact long before his other political counterparts, has not really talked about it at all. What I meant by past political rhetoric is that where it has been only a subject that was considered to be controversial and something that people question whether it was real. This is what I mean. It's past that stage.
In other words, the science is no longer questioned.
That's right, exactly. And when Dr. Baker and Mr. Ewens write this kind of a letter, I think they're trying to say the whole world has got to take notice and sit up, and that there has to be some changes. And after this interview with Dr. Baker, I will have another fascinating one with a climatologist at NCAR about new work that raises the issue of, well, if we're in global warming, what happens to the weather over the next century?
Well, good. Maybe Matt Lauer will be listening. So let us continue then with our interview.
Yes, and before the break, I had asked Dr. Baker, what about the insurance companies? What happens when they start saying to coastal residents, we cannot afford to insure anymore?
Right.
Now I'm continuing with Dr. Baker.
Question that the insurance companies are very concerned. The losses due to weather-related disasters have been rapidly rising. You have more people living on the coast. We've got more expensive homes. And so this is something where the insurance companies are vulnerable. They have been helping us in terms of doing research and trying to understand the systems and trying to improve our forecast. This is a segment of industry that is very concerned. The insurance company is a very important part of our economic stability in the United States, and they're being listened to.
But why isn't Congress listening?
It's hard to say. I can't really give you an answer about how Congress makes its decisions, but I hope that we will find some progress on these issues in the next few years.
Do you think it's going to take a catastrophe that is beyond anything that we've imagined so far?
Well, sometimes catastrophes are ways to get action. We've certainly seen that after some of the major hurricanes. Let's hope that there's enough awareness, and that was, of course, one reason for writing this letter, that we can get enough awareness that we can get some real action without having to suffer a major catastrophe.
Do you, from your perspective, looking at a lot of the computer projection models of the laboratories around the world, from Hadley to GIST and so forth, do you see a projection over the next, let's say, 30 years in which wind systems alone could continue to keep exceeding 200 miles an hour?
This is a good question. I don't have a strong answer for that, but wind and wind speed is something that our scientific researchers are looking into very carefully. We have a better understanding of how the temperatures change at this point, but we're very concerned about that, and that's one of the subjects we've been studying.
and the Arctic. Now, in December, there was the report that 40% of the North Arctic ice has now melted. That is diluting the salt content in some of the currents, especially the North Atlantic Drift, which provides the warm water from the tropics to England and Europe. Are you at all concerned at this point about the North Atlantic Drift changing?
Well, this has been one of the big issues because our models, although they are certainly not complete as far as oceans are concerned, all seem to say that as you add greenhouse gases and you change things like the Arctic ice, it's very possible that you could change some of these major currents. That changes the heat that goes to Europe. It certainly could lead to things like little ice ages and other things. Whether this happens is still a question, but like you, I was very concerned to hear that the ice pack in the Arctic is diminishing with these very accurate new measurements that we have. Another indication that we are probably seeing a global warming effect.
What kind of response do you get from the administration officials when you present this data and say we have a very serious problem that's going to continue to affect us decade after decade?
The administration has proposed a number of energy measures addressed both at new technology, at trying to reduce energy use and so on. None of them have gone very far into Congress, but I would say we have an administration that's very aware of the problem and would like to see some action.
Are you personally dismayed that all of this cannot happen faster?
Well, faster would be better. There's no question about that.
Okay, so there is the top U.S. meteorologist in concert with the top British meteorologist. While I am not one, they are.
Yes, and I think that they would agree that any of us, journalists or others, who will do some serious research about this should be communicating to the public at large that we are in a time of rapidly changing climate with implications. And in fact, in November 2000, the next big global climate conference will be the Framework Convention on Climate Change, which is coming up in The Hague in the Netherlands. That will be the major meeting this year where countries come together from all over the world and ask what are the next steps that can be taken to work on issues of understanding, mitigating, and developing technologies related to climate change. I think that this entire interview that I did with Dr. Baker is important, and if listeners would like to see the entire transcript, you can see this whole interview, and you can hear a real audio version that is a bit longer than the one tonight at my website, which is www.earthfiles.com in the environment section. That's www.earthfiles.com for this story on the NOAA and UK joint letter on global warming. Now, what happens to global weather systems if the Earth warms up several more degrees Fahrenheit in the future?
Mm-hmm.
That's a question that the Pew Center on Global Climate Change in Arlington, Virginia, wanted to know. So they went to climate expert Dr. Tom Wigley at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado. Dr. Wigley received his Ph.D. in theoretical physics from the University of Adelaide in Australia in 1967. And has become an expert in climate. The past 6 years, he has focused on computer models of Earth weather systems to project the effects of ever-increasing greenhouse gases. Recently, Dr. Wigley's computer research was released by the Pew Center. He presented two possible scenarios, one in which carbon dioxide emissions would remain high over the next 100 years, the other factored in cleaner energy technologies. The computer conclusions? Well, in the higher CO2 emission scenario, the average surface temperature of the Earth increases about 5 degrees Fahrenheit and the sea level rises about 2 feet. In the lower CO2 emission scenario, the average temperature increase is about 3.5 degrees and sea level rises about 1.5 feet. That's not much difference, actually. And the impact on temperatures and rainfall around the world can be summarized this way. Heating would not be uniform. North America would warm more than the global average. Northern latitudes would heat up more than southern ones. Cities such as New York and Philadelphia would have climates more like North Carolina. Winters would become shorter. Northern growing seasons would lengthen and more crops would thrive. But southern states might become so dry and hot that crops must be changed.
Linda, may I ask a quick question?
Yes.
You said that northern latitudes and North America, for example, would suffer more than the southern latitudes like Australia. There is an exchange that goes on. In other words, weather is global. And there is an exchange of air between North America, for example, and southern latitudes like Australia.
Well, in fact, I asked...
So it must be lessened a little bit as it exchanges into the other part of the world.
Well, in terms of the global computer models, what happens in the northern hemisphere is pretty much what happens in the southern hemisphere. The difference is that we have many more land masses in the northern hemisphere, and where the temperatures are projected to get warmer in the higher latitudes in the northern hemisphere compared to the lower, the same thing in the southern hemisphere. It's exactly the same. They're kind of mirror images. So that part of the system is the same around the world. The higher latitudes in either hemisphere will get warmer. Now, the summer heat waves would become more dangerous as average temperatures and humidity shift upward, and we've been seeing that the last three or four summers. Both floods and droughts would increase in different parts of the world. And the reason? The warmer the atmosphere becomes, the more moisture it can hold. Water will evaporate from the land more quickly between storms in some areas, but when it rains, the water will be much greater. Heavy downpours will not be absorbed by soil fast enough, so more flash flooding is predicted, similar to what happened recently in South America. The heavier precipitation patterns mean that, ironically, as the Earth warms more over the next century, snowstorms could become heavier even though winters might be warmer and shorter. I talked with Dr. Wigley about his computer projections today and asked him if he was optimistic or pessimistic about our future in relationship to global warming, weather events, and the impact on people. Here is Dr. Tom Wigley from NCAR.
I'm neither optimistic nor pessimistic. I'm realistic. I don't think we're going to respond rapidly to this problem, but I don't think we're heading for catastrophe. I think in North America and in Europe that the changes that are going to occur, and I think certain changes are, inevitable. We can respond to, we can adapt to. But there are other parts of the world that will not be able to respond what's going to happen. And these things are going to happen no matter what we do. The real issue, I think, is coastal environments. So there are places, low-lying island states, coastal areas that have inevitable sea level rises that they're going to cope with, and I think that's going to be really difficult.
And so we're going to end up with people who may be forced, actually, to move from islands or from low coastal areas because there is no option.
That's true. And there are other problems as well, not just related to sea level rise directly, but in a country like Bangladesh, for example, very low-lying for a large part of its area, affected by tropical storms in the Bay of Bengal. As sea level rises, then the storm surges associated with those tropical storms are going to be far more damaging. So they're going to basically get it in spades.
And if they get it in spades, where does that huge population go?
It's not just the huge population that's there now, but there's a very substantial population growth rate in Bangladesh and many of these countries, too. So if we think about what it might be like 30 years in the future, higher sea level, a remote possibility of stronger and more frequent tropical storms, and, you know, perhaps double the population. I just don't know how we can possibly cope with problems like that. You know, by we, I mean the global population. This is a global problem, and we have to tackle them as we have to tackle the problem as a global community. One of the trigger points is that the Mediterranean basin, the southern part of Europe, is almost certainly going to get a lot warmer and probably drier. So that means that people around the Mediterranean basin, you know, the people in Africa, for example, are going to find that they are living in a climate that they cannot cope with. So what do they do?
Can we ever get to a point that we could artificially control weather systems of the Earth to prevent the fact that there's going to be tremendous areas of geography that aren't going to be able to sustain food and people as they are now?
All right, we'll hold it right there. Now, that's interesting. An interesting place to leave it. That in response, we could somehow artificially, perhaps, control the weather, the climate, to compensate for what otherwise will occur. Now, you're listening to a climatologist with whom I obviously agree. Not much we can do about it. Be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from January 13th, 2000. Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from January 13th, 2000.
Well, I may not be a meteorologist, but I've talked to them. I may not be a climatologist, but I've talked to them. And actually, tonight, we've got the top U.S. meteorologist already interviewed, and one of the top climatologists in the middle of being interviewed, all about climate change. Don't touch that dial. Right, you are listening to an interview with one of our nation's top climatologists. You just heard one from our nation's top meteorologist. But this climatologist is very interesting in that, from his perspective, if I heard him correctly, and I think I did, he is much the way I am. In other words, prepare for change, because frankly, in areas that will be affected, I believe I heard him say there's just not a hell of a lot we can do about it. Isn't that essentially correct, Linda?
That's true, especially in the coastal areas. He was focusing on that we're going to have huge changes in some parts of the world, such as Bangladesh, where there are millions and millions of people who will be affected. And depending upon what the sea level rise rate is over the next decades, it will affect storm surges coming into coastlines completely around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asking him before the break, what about humans who have been contributing to global warming, turning around at some point with technology and artificially controlling weather systems of the Earth. And this is continuing with Dr. Tom Wigley, climatologist at NCAR in Boulder.
So can we take control of this is the question.
That's another issue that has been explored to some degree, is the issue of geoengineering. You know, can we engineer the climate to suit our needs? Well, right now we're performing an uncontrolled experiment, and we don't really understand what's happening, and we can't predict what's going to happen in the future. So
the uncontrolled,
you know,
being our unrelenting contribution of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere.
Exactly. So, you know, given the uncertainties there, right now it would be very dangerous to try and geoengineer the climate, you know, to actually deliberately try to do something to change the climate. Because the possibility of predicting what might happen if we do something deliberately is quite remote. I mean, that's just as difficult a problem as predicting what's going to happen due to increasing greenhouse gas concentrations. Now, it might be that, you know, 10, 20, 30 years down into the future, that we have better models and we understand the system better, that we could contemplate artificially modifying the climate to suit our own desires. So that's not an impossibility. You know, all things are possible, and we get smarter as we go on.
But tricky to do without causing even greater problems.
Could be, but of course, if we have good models and can predict what's going to happen, then, you know, we decide what to do on the basis of those predictions.
And at that highest level of almost 6 degrees Fahrenheit in 100 years, which is six times what had happened in just this previous century, would the storms, though, scale up as well?
No, they wouldn't. To just give you one concrete example, hurricanes, according to some model predictions, would become more intense. In other words, the winds associated with hurricanes would be stronger, but they wouldn't be five times stronger. They might only be, you know, 5% stronger.
I see.
Okay, so, you know, things do not scale up in that simple way.
Yeah,
fortunately, you know, I'd hate to see hurricanes five times as strong.
Yeah.
To do any sort of scaling exercise, you'd have to look at weather now compared with the weather 100 years ago. So then you say, well, are the winds much stronger now compared with what they were 100 years ago? And the answer is not noticeably. You know, are hurricanes more intense now than they were 100 years ago? And the answer is not noticeably.
And art, a sign of the times. On January 7th, 2000, the Waukegan News Sun in Illinois had this headline, quote, NICOR buys insurance against warm weather. NICOR is a natural gas company headquartered in West Chicago. The story went on, quote, for the first time, NICOR said it has purchased a weather insurance policy designed to protect the company from losses in the event of unusually warm weather. The one-year policy, which became effective January 1st, will pay NICOR when the weather is more than 6.5% warmer than normal.
Wow.
The policy is being provided by North American Capacity Insurance Company and will cost NICOR 1% of its earnings for 2000, according to NICOR spokesman Lee Haynes, unquote.
That is remarkable. Linda, he discussed the ability that we don't have yet, we believe, to control the weather, climate control.
Right.
And I thought about that. If climate control was achieved, it would be achieved by one of the major industrial scientific powers, i.e. probably us. Do you think that's a fair assumption?
Well, I think the United States right now is the driving technological force.
Right. So if we achieved climate control and the climate continued to get out of hand, as it appears to be, I think it's reasonable to ask, if rain was needed, do you think Bangladesh would get it or we would get it? If drier weather was needed, do you think Bangladesh would get it or we would get it?
That is another part of the interview with Dr. Wigley. We actually talked about those very questions, how difficult it is when you're dealing with an entire global problem and that you have all of the various nations that would have some need if Europe becomes colder and the United States becomes warmer. You've got two basic competing kinds of weather, you might say weather patterns.
There are nations, Linda, that would consider taking their valuable weather, dependent agricultural dependent weather, away as an act of war.
Well, he also brought that up, and this may be that as things get more serious, one of the reasons why politicians don't want to touch this story is that the implications become so serious, and they don't want to discuss it. And Dr. Wigley's point, and I think Dr. Baker's point is, and what I meant earlier, we're past the issues of political rhetoric. Huh. We are facing hard physical data that is coming in every month, all the time now, from satellites and other monitoring systems around the world.
You bet.
We are in a time of change, and as one of the scientists that I interviewed on a program a month or two ago said, we are moving into uncharted waters. We do not know precisely what the consequences will be, and the computer projection programs, which are very good, but they are dependent only on what we have as current data at any given point to put into the computers.
Earlier today, you told me something that kind of blew me away. You said, I think you said, that in 30 years, all the Arctic ice will be gone. Is that true?
Yes. The current state of melt, the rate of melt
continues
on the Arctic, if it continued unabated, in 30 years, all of the North Arctic ice would be gone.
So it would just be seawater there?
It would be just seawater. And when you say that, it seems extremely dramatic. It's hard to imagine that in our lifetime that something could occur like that the ice has been there through the last 5,000 years and more, and suddenly in a period of time in one century or a course of 60-some years that it could completely melt. Now, can things happen that change the rate of the melt? Yes. If we are in global warming and the snowfall becomes greater, which is possible at the North Pole, then it may slow down the rate of melt. This is not known what is going to happen, but I am in constant dialogue with scientists who are trying to study this very question among many others, because if the melt rate does remain the same over the next 30 years, we will have only a watery North Pole.
That's almost too weird to contemplate. I mean, when you look at the Earth from space and you see the ice at the top and the ice at the bottom, to imagine the ice at the top being gone, and maybe the ice at the bottom being gone, for that matter, is really weird to even think about, and the consequences are incredible. Here's a question for you. Mention politics. Robert Murphy from Seattle asks, please ask Linda the following. If we're all genuine in our concern over global warming, do you think it makes any difference who we vote for in the upcoming presidential election? This is to ask, will the ex-oil man from Texas, George W. Bush, lead the country into a future of alternative fuels? Will any of them?
Probably not. Interestingly enough, though, a company is actually beginning to lead the way in what could be a direction that if the whole world would try to follow the lead of Honda. Just recently, the Sierra Club noted that Honda Insight, it's a hybrid car that combines solar electric power with gas and gets 70 miles per gallon.
Mm-hmm.
The Sierra Club honored this Honda hybrid with its first Excellence in Environmental Engineering Award in Los Angeles on January 7th. Honda's Insight is priced now at about $20,000 and is the first hybrid to be sold in the United States. Sierra Club's executive director, Carl Pope, presented the award and said, because the auto industry is finally moving to produce vehicles that represent a major step forward in improving the environment, unquote. And the problem, though, is that the sport utility vehicles, they have become increasingly an overwhelming presence, not only in the United States but other places, and they are contributing a tremendous amount of emissions to the atmosphere, and this is something that President Clinton is trying to address recently. And so you're beginning to hear political commentary, for example, in the president trying to say something has to be done about sport utility vehicles, and you've got Honda leading the way, at least coming out with an affordable car, 70 miles to the gallon, that the Sierra Club is honoring because it is going to be so friendly to the environment. And you've heard me say on Dreamland and Coast over the last several years that if we could get everybody out of large cars and large emitting vehicles into something that was small and only made for transportation and no other reason, we could make a gigantic dent in what is happening in the CO2 emissions.
But it's gone the opposite way. I mean, we had the big gas crisis. Everybody freaked out. Japan made small cars. A lot of people bought them. Then somehow it got okay again, and we began building big cars again.
Which is why it would be so, it seems to me, it would make so much sense if somebody like Al Gore, who has written about global warming long before anybody running for president, used this as a time to make all of these issues clear, and he might actually make some headway. But he, like all the others, have remained silent on this.
Well, but in his case, he at one time was not silent. So his silence now is very telling. And what it's telling me is that to discuss this,
it's not politically acceptable.
It's a political death sentence.
Yeah. But as Dr. Wigley said, it hardly matters because the Earth is its own large machine, and forces are at work. Climate change is upon us. It's going to continue to evolve regardless of what we do. As you heard Dr. Baker say, it takes, you're talking about a 300-year arc on carbon dioxide to go into the atmosphere and come out. 300-year arc.
Well, when you get something as startling, Linda, as a letter from the top meteorologist in the U.S. and the top meteorologist in Great Britain together deciding they had to make this really radical statement about rapidly accelerating change.
Well, one of the
does that make a difference? Not yet. I mean,
it's like the beginning, Art. It's like there's going to be more and more of this. And one of the features I'm going to start doing at earthfiles.com, probably at the top of the headline section, is I'm going to continue doing a global warming update, because the amount of information that is now coming in to a variety of scientists from air, land, and water is increasing. There's definitely a great concern to try to get as accurate a handle as possible on all of these changes. And when that data came out on the Arctic ice melt, I remember talking with a scientist at one of the NASA facilities in New York who is an atmospheric physicist. He was surprised when he learned that the new data had measured a 40% melt loss in the Arctic ice.
And here's the most surprising thing of all. I mean, it's so sad that the information was not given to us. And the reason it was not given to us is because of the Cold War. Because I'm told that our submarines made the measurements, and they wouldn't release the information because that would tell the Russians, our adversaries at that time and still, frankly, where our subs had been and where they would likely go again. So can you imagine the guys who had this information at the speed of the melt going on in the Arctic and couldn't give it out because of national security?
Yes, I can imagine that in the Cold War. But since the Cold War, I think it's become even more sophisticated in terms of measurements from satellites and using lasers. And it was the accuracy of this new data that has surprised everyone.
Yeah, but can you imagine these poor guys who knew this was going on, had the measurements, and were forbidden to say anything because of national security for all that time? That'd be a heavy, to me, that would be a very heavy burden to assume. All right, Linda, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. I'd like to come back and take some calls in the next segment. So it's exactly what we're going to do. Linda Moulton Howe is here. And if you have questions about any of this, or if you're feeling contentious about it because it makes you angry, well then, dial us up. You know the number. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from January 13th, 2000. Presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired January 13th, 2000.
Many of us have been accused of that. Good morning, everybody. Linda Moulton Howe is here, and we're going to the phones here in a moment. We're talking about climate change, because it's happening. All right, once again, back to Linda Moulton Howe. And Linda, just one quick facts question, which is a good one, then we'll go to the phones. It is this. Linda, great as always, here's a question for her. Have any of these scientists doing climate modeling taken into consideration what occurs when 300 million trees are taken out of the oxygen CO2 cycle? These trees are cleaning up tons of CO2 every minute. What happens when they're not doing their job anymore? And I might add, the rainforest and all the rest of the deforestation that's been going on, where does that figure into the calculation?
Well, it's a good question. Certainly in Brazil, more than 300 million trees are being burned up and slashed and cut down every day as we speak. But nevertheless, that was a gigantic gash in the French environment. And the balance between what trees are doing with the atmosphere in relationship to what we are doing is an area that I know that there are scientists who are trying to study and understand that exchange and where the direction is headed, but I don't know that there is an answer to that question.
We've had some pretty good blowdowns in this country as well, haven't we?
Yes, but in terms of two storms in an area as concentrated as Paris, taking down those many trees at once, that was
amazing.
Really something.
Absolutely amazing. All right, here we go. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Linda Moulton Howe. Good morning. Hello. Going once.
Hi.
Hi, you made it.
I wasn't sure I was on the wild card. I thought, that's right, I am.
Yes, you are.
This is Carol from Palm Desert, California.
Hi, Carol.
First of all, I want to tell you, Art, that I watched your NBC interview on Wednesday.
Oh, yes.
And I sent you an email about it.
Ah.
So you may find it in your stack there.
I'll take a look. What did you say, essentially?
Oh, I said basically that I thought it was a difficult interview because I agree that they were contentious, is the word that you used.
Yeah.
But I think that they have some concerns that people will overreact as usual.
I see.
Yeah. I have a suggestion, and then I have a question for Linda. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
The question is, or the suggestion is that the Art Bell, you consider perhaps organizing some sort of a mail, fax, and email campaign, because I'm sure there are millions of Art Bell listeners around the world who would be willing to contribute to this campaign.
I agree with you. You mean to force it into the political arena?
Yes, because we can be a force, I'm sure, around the world. We can communicate with foreign governments as well as we can communicate with the United States governments. But if we don't, what chance have we got unless we do bring this to their attention?
I agree with you. And Linda, do you think that the top U.S. meteorologists and the top U.K. meteorologists thought that they might cause people to overreact before they issued their letter?
No. I think that they feel that it is time for everyone to start taking action from the smallest level of making decisions about what kind of car you buy to how you burn your electricity. These are all the areas that every single one of us can have some impact on. And
so people are underreacting, really.
And I think that Dr. Baker said it so well when he was talking about that we've got to join together in technology that can be taken to the third world countries that want technological advancement and they want a higher standard of living, and that we have to say, learn from our mistakes, meaning the industrialized world.
Don't do as we have done.
Yeah, and that we can help you with new technologies that are not going to be putting so much greenhouse emissions into the atmosphere, but that you will still be able to raise your standard of living. And now, when you say that, which is exactly what Dr. Baker is saying in another part of the interview, then it means that we are going forward more and more with a problem that is a global problem, and it's going to take global political agreement on what can be done from country to country, and that's where it really gets difficult.
Well, I'll say. All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Linda Moulton Howe. Good morning.
Is this east of the Rockies?
That's you, all right. Where are you?
I'm in Columbus, Ohio.
Sounds east to me.
Yes, it is. I have a quick question, kind of physics sort of thing.
Sure.
If you stick some ice cubes in a glass of water and let them melt, the water level doesn't rise.
That's right.
So if all that ice up north is just floating there, then how is that melting going to affect the...
It's not.
It doesn't affect sea level rise. The Arctic, what it is affecting is that is fresh water that is melting into the salty Atlantic, and that very important North Atlantic drift and other currents. When you have a lot of fresh water that is coming into salty water, it dilutes the salt. And when you dilute the salty water, you change the density of the water. When you change the density of the water to a certain degree, it's going to change the speed of the current. That is what scientists have been monitoring, and they have been seeing some changes in the North Atlantic drift.
I think what he's asking is, with the old ice cube in the glass question, you have said that ocean levels, as a result of what's going on, will ultimately rise. How can that happen, he says?
Okay, that is from the glacial ice melt that is coming off of the land all over the world. And Antarctic, there have been massive ice shelves down there that have been melting. The next big question is, will there be accelerated melt of the ice that is on land at the Antarctic?
Like the Ross Ice Shelf.
And right. Yes, and as the West Antarctic Ice Shelf is more fragile, if that ice starts coming off into the ocean from land, then that is going to raise sea level. But it is not just dependent upon Antarctica. Glaciers have been melting all over the world at a rapid rate, and that is runoff from the land into the sea. And any runoff from the land into the sea is contributing to sea level rise.
I'm glad you clarified that, sir.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, and take care. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Linda Moulton Howe. Good morning. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
if the ozone layer is so important, and
yes,
we know how to generate ozone, why couldn't we not put an ozone generator into the atmosphere?
Well, you know, I'm really glad you asked about that. Thank you. Linda, one of the latest pet theories about these contrails has been laid out recently that would suggest that the contrails that we see, that we're calling chemtrails and complaining about, mm-hmm, might be a secondary effect of an attempt to mediate the ozone problem. In other words, they're putting something in the atmosphere, part of which is going up, but part of which inevitably is coming down. And
well,
that's just somebody's guess, but it's a good one.
Well, without confirmation from somebody doing it, it remains speculation, and I would not have any data to support that, but I can tell you I have talked with a physicist in California who went so far as to make plans for how ozone-generating equipment could be put up into the upper atmosphere. There has been that kind of concern at a scientific level, but I do have some good news on the ozone front. One of the laboratories, there are about seven major laboratories around the world in various countries that are involved with collecting data having to do with the air, the land, and the water on an ongoing basis,
mm-hmm,
and putting together computer projections. And one of those is an installation at Columbia University in New York. It's known as GIS, which has to do with space and science and the study of the atmosphere. And one of the areas that they have been studying is related to this whole question of Art, I just had one of those where I was reading and thinking of something, and just get me back on the track of her question.
Good news on ozone.
Yes, that on the ozone layer, on the computer projection, that what they have are seeing is that within 60 years, the ozone layer will be back to where it was in the early 1970s if all continues to go forward as it is now, having to do with the Montreal Protocol, which affected a reduction in the various kinds of chemicals that countries were putting into the atmosphere that was destroying ozone. So that is one of the good stories from current computer projections. It may come back into health on its own in 60 years. That means that humans were able to act, were able to reduce
and actually affect something.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. First time caller line, you're on the air with Linda Moulton Howe. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Yes.
I can't believe it. Finally, I've gotten through to you.
Yes, you have.
Oh, good gravy. Anyway, the world, first of all, the world owes you a note of thanks for you raising the awareness for the Y2K problem. Just as you said in your interview, you pay insurance. Do you smack yourself in the head?
When your house doesn't burn down and you still pay
exactly
your premium. Sure, that's right.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, $250 billion worldwide was spent on Y2K, and so it's a good thing that we didn't have a disaster.
But if
nobody had done anything, we surely would have.
That's correct, and you were a part of raising the awareness, and I personally want to thank you.
You're very
welcome. Now, Linda, I'll tell you something. Just as Art has handled Y2K, and I come from 30 miles north of Philadelphia, WPHT. My name is Naomi. Good old WCAU, okay? Just as Art has raised the awareness for Y2K and has prevented large global problems already, as he's already committed in his book to do the same environmentally, and I will tell you, I feed birds. This summer there was a drought. The birds outside of my house, and I have several acres, had eaten over 500 pounds of seed because there was no seed. We can make an effect. We can do something good. And 30 years of knowledge of recorded climactic history doesn't touch base because, geologically speaking, it says it in the ground. It's in the rock. If you go to the Grand Canyon, if you go to the center of the trees, the climate tells you the whole story.
It does. And Linda, she's very close to you. And I know that you noticed some pretty strange occurrences this last year in Philadelphia. I think there was a time when the flies or something were absolutely driving you crazy back there. And
yes.
There's going to be a lot of that kind of change with the climate change.
And we have not really had a winter this year at all. Tonight is the first night that it is really cold and a wind. But at New Year's Eve, it was actually warm. And for people in the West who may not have realized, we were in 64, 65 degree temperatures.
I know.
In the 1st of January.
I know. I know. And it's already, what is today, and it's finally getting cold. It's the 14th of January.
Yeah, and we've had no snow.
No snow. I know they got a little snow in Manhattan and Boston earlier today, but the snow levels are unbelievable. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Linda Moulton Howe.
Yes, sir.
Turn your radio off, please.
The radio is off, thank you.
You're welcome.
I would like to suggest is that we have an isthmus down between our two sections here, and if we could increase the seawater transportation through there, first with a tidal electric power and then a sea level canal, and ultimately convert it to a causeway, all of which could be turned off if it was unhappy, and trace those currents.
I'm not clear, sir, on what you're suggesting.
I'm suggesting that we increase the flow of seawater by opening the isthmus down there. Or
down where?
Through the isthmus of Panama.
Okay.
Or anywhere in that region where it would be effective. And we would not only enrich those people, which will ultimately decrease their population growth, but we'd enrich people in our own continent that need an economic base where they're at, and it's a type of thing where you could put tracers on that water and see if it was effective in suppressing
the. All right, I see exactly what you're saying. Linda, would there be any would we ameliorate anything? Would anything change if we were to open up some sort of slice in an area in Central America so the oceans could commingle at that point rather than?
Not to my knowledge at all. And in fact, sometimes when water bodies, when there's an opening, you can cause greater problems sometimes for marine life. I don't know enough about the whole Panama Isthmus, the water separation there, to know exactly whether anybody's even studied to an extent what would happen if that was open wider. But it really wouldn't have any impact on the big machinery that we're talking about, such as the North Atlantic Drift.
Okay. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Linda Moulton Howe and Art Bell. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Hi.
You mentioned something earlier that the warming goes and goes. It's like a rubber band stretched and then snaps back suddenly to an ice age.
Well, we have. When they take ice core samples, they're able to discern that there have been rapid climate changes geologically in the past on Earth.
I was wondering why it wouldn't cool off as slowly as it got warmer.
Okay, I can step in here with an interview that I'll have at earthfiles.com in the next day or two. It's a scientist who has specialized in studying the ice cores and looking at it from the standpoint of global climate change. And he was telling me that in as they go down inch by inch by inch by inch, and there are all of these layers that relate to various kinds of changes between even summer and winter. He was explaining how the chemistry of ice and snow that accumulates in summer temperatures is very different from winter, and that it's extremely accurate. They have learned how accurate it is. And that in this big profile that they have developed from these ice cores, they have learned that almost always global warming happens much, much more rapidly than global cooling. So right now, the forces are at work in a global warming system that it is happening rapidly. And if you go back 15,000 years, essentially, the last time that there was something in the ice core that showed global warming happening, it goes back 15,000 years before you get to a point that is anywhere comparable to what we're experiencing now. And that was coming out of the big ice age time, mm-hmm. which took a long time to come into play. The ice ages took a long time to come into play, but the actual meltdown has been quite much more rapid, and we are now in global warming, and it is happening at an accelerated level.
All right. Linda, it's been such a pleasure, as always, to have you on. I want you to give out your contact information. A lot of people are going to have a lot to say to you about this, and so please give them an opportunity to do that and plug whatever you want to plug.
Thank you. You can communicate with me on email at earthfiles@earthfiles.com. My website is www.earthfiles.com, in which I'm focusing on issues in science and the environment and real X-Files. For people who are using faxes, my fax number is area code 215-491-9842. That's 215-491-9842. And the snail mail address is Post Office Box 300 in Jamison, Pennsylvania, zip code 18929. And some of this whole issue of climate change has actually been addressed in some of the books that I have written. The most recent, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 1 and Volume 2, come at this from a very different point of view in the human abduction syndrome about climate change as it relates to the issues there. And for people who would like to see those books, you can go to the bookstore at earthfiles.com, and they are all referenced there, or you can go directly to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com on the Internet and look for, under my name, Linda Howe, or Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 1 and 2, and another book called An Alien Harvest. And Art, it has been a privilege and a pleasure to have this much time tonight to talk about what I think is one of the more important subjects on our planet.
You've got it. Linda, as always, bless your heart. Thank you until we meet again.
All right.
Good night. That's Linda Moulton Howe, folks. So you just heard from the nation's top meteorologist and one of our top climatologists.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from January 13th, 2000.
Good morning, everybody. Antonio Joseph Mendez will be here tomorrow night. He is a retired CIA officer. That is, if you believe there is such thing, and actually he will admit, I believe, tomorrow night that he's not completely retired. So the CIA here tomorrow night. That should be instructive, and yes, I will be here tomorrow night. Now, it is so frustrating to me, not just to do an interview myself like I did with Matt Lauer on NBC, and have that sort of obvious anger, but to then once you bring the top meteorologist from this country, who issued a joint letter with Britain's top meteorologist, when you bring climatologists on, well-respected climatologists, and then you get a fax like this. Hey, Art, tell Linda Howe to get a real job, not selling fear for dollars. I mean, see, that's how people react. Some people react to this kind of information with anger. It's just an absolutely amazing thing to me, but it is true. Well, we will dive into open lines and anything you want to talk about in a moment. All right, a little other news, and then we'll go to open lines. I just got this from an interesting memo, inside memo, no doubt. And maybe somebody in Fresno can confirm this, but it says, as of 11 o'clock today, the Fresno POD lost all of its telecommunication circuits, both voice and data. This means they have no telephone or email communications at the present time. We have opened trouble tickets with both Pacific Bell and our data network provider to correct the problem. However, at the present time, we have no projection of when service is going to be restored. Cause of the problem unknown, but since both voice and data are affected and there is no power outage, we suspect the lines bringing these circuits to the POD may have been cut somewhere outside the building. And, of course, it is not Y2K related. Now, I've got a couple of other things that I want to run by you. Here's one that you ought to be a little curious about. It says, Art, welcome back. You had a great trip. I did. I heard on the news last Monday that oceanographers are mystified by a huge increase in jellyfish populations in all of the world's oceans. Aren't any news, insights, ideas, or explanations of this phenomenon? Frank in Big Fork, Montana. No, I have no idea. It is the first I have heard about it. It could certainly be a result of, you know, change, but that is speculation on my part. International Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning, Mr. Bell. How are you? It's Anne in Ontario calling.
Hi, Anne.
I wanted to mention something about this little boy that is in Florida right now.
Yes.
It was his mother and his stepfather who drowned en route.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, but I think if the mother was willing to risk all of their lives to take him to the United States, she must have really wanted that for her son.
There's absolutely no question about it. But the father is the natural father, right?
He is, but did he have custody? There's so many...
Whether or not he had custody, since the mother and the stepfather are dead, he would be the natural one to get custody, wouldn't he?
Not necessarily.
Isn't that the way it works in this country? I mean, unless there's something horrendously wrong with him, like he's...
I mean, you could ask yourself other questions, like maybe was he a child abuser and that's why the mother left him? I mean, we just don't know.
Well, yeah, you could ask those questions, and if they were answered yes, then obviously you would not want to return him.
One of the things I don't understand is that Cuba wants to constantly have nice, cozy relationships with Canada, and our government allows them to advertise on our television.
Oh, it's not just that. Canadian citizens can fly unfettered to Canada any damn time they want. You can book a flight and go down to Havana with no problem at all.
Right.
We can't.
And I don't understand why, you know, the Americans that are supposed to have all kinds of freedoms can't do the things that we can do.
Well, I think I know why, and I'm perfectly willing to say. I think that there was a deal that was cut with Cuba a long time ago. I think that it's something that none of us specifically know about. After the Bay of Pigs, after the assassination of threats to Castro and the assassination of President Kennedy and the Cuban Missile Crisis, there was a deal struck. And I think that deal remains in place today and will remain in place until Castro dies. That's what I think. Call me whatever you want for that, but that's what I happen to believe to be true. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Hey, Art Bell.
Hey there.
Let me turn my radio off.
Thank you.
This is Steve in Mississippi.
Yes, sir.
How's it going tonight?
Pretty well.
It's quite fortuitous I would get in touch with you tonight, actually. When you were in New York for your book signing.
Yes, sir.
My brother lives up there, and he came by the book signing and got me an autographed copy.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, he actually came by. He lives about a block off Times Square.
Mm-hmm.
So he said it wasn't too far for him, so he went over there, and he sent me an email yesterday. He said he had it in the mail, so I ought to have it in a day or two, I guess.
So it's on the way, huh? Well, that's going to be a very rare item because, of course, Whidley and myself are unable to get together to do signings, so you've got a one-of-a-kind thing there.
Yeah. Something I would have really loved to see y'all do when you were up there, and I guess it'd probably be a long time before you're back in New York, but I watch Imus most of the time on MSNBC in the morning.
Right.
And since y'all are both, you know, very well-known radio personalities, I thought that would have been pretty good. But
To go on Imus?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. They had me... they had me lined up for interviews like every waking minute.
I can imagine.
So I don't know where they would have. I don't know if I could have handled that. If you're going to go on Imus, you got to get a good night's sleep first.
Oh yeah, and you got to be prepared for whatever might come up because they get pretty rowdy.
In fact, you know what I was going to do?
Uh-huh.
I was going to go on WABC and I was going to say, "Thank you, Detroit." You know that thing where they say never underestimate the good night's sleep?
Oh, yeah.
I was going to use that, but I didn't.
And the previous caller you had on that mentioned the thing about the change in Russia's nuke posture.
Yes.
That's like the headline item on Drudge right now.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's right up at the top of his page, right up there, his, you know, the Drudge Report header.
Yep.
And I thought this might be a good time to have J.R. Nyquist and Colonel Luneff back on.
It would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah, because I know they've been preaching that for years now.
Well, we stand at the precipice of a big change, my friend.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm afraid it's not necessarily a good one.
Yeah. And it's a strange situation over there. I had a very good friend I went to high school with that married a guy from overseas, and they lived in Moscow for about 2 years trying to do business over there. And it's really screwed up.
A lot of people have lost their shirts.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to do business in Moscow.
Yeah. The mafia just runs everything over there.
Yep.
They just, death threats, the whole nine yards. I mean, this...
No, you're absolutely right. And that is liable to bring about a demand for the Iron Hand to return. I mean, there's a lot of political push for that right now.
Yeah, that people would rather have repression and order than they would freedom and disorder.
That's
apparently.
Right. That's so it would seem.
Yep.
Thank you very much. Well, that comes from years of having cradle to grave... care, cradle-to-grave coverage, cradle-to-grave mediocrity. Apparently it is preferenced over some rough times, because you got to go through it. You know, the freedom is not free. It actually is quite costly, and they're paying that cost right now. I wonder if they will continue to. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, how's it going, Art?
Okay.
Good to have you back. This is Chris and Eugene listening to you on 1120 KPNW.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I just want to let you know, I kind of moved out here to the West Coast to experiment and with riding my bicycle and not riding, you know, not driving my car and stuff because I'm environmentally conscious.
Yes.
And it's interesting because everybody's driving these four-wheel drive vehicles all around. And the weather is kind of weird, and I live between two rivers, the Willamette and the Mackenzie.
Right.
And honestly, I wanted to call and tell you this because it's kind of weird that when I lie in bed and listen to you, I actually feel the ground shake. And it feels like mini earthquakes almost every night.
Hmm.
It's really interesting.
Well, that is weird.
So I'm glad you got back safely, and I'm going to go get your book, and hope Terrence McKenna is doing all right.
Last I heard, Terrence was okay.
Excellent.
Fingers crossed, you know, that it doesn't grow back. But so far, so good.
Awesome.
All right.
Okay, bud. You take care. You sound good.
You're right. Take care. Yep. Terrence, at last report, is holding his own. The treatments appear to have worked. Now, there's a big caution here with that kind of a brain problem, you know, with that kind of tumor, and that is that they frequently do grow back. But Terrence is taking every step he can, and Terrence knows if he wants airtime, he can call me and get it at will. International Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. It's Sammy calling from Canada's capital, Ottawa, listening to you at 580 CFRA.
Yes, sir.
Two items to me, if I can.
Okay.
Item one, I'm glad you mentioned the three-day wait on the problems with the satellites on the scanning and the problems with that.
Well, isn't that amazing? I mean, yeah. That in itself is amazing that they, of course, did not tell us that until now, number one. Number two, even more serious in my estimation, is the fact that 5 to 7 hours every day, the Russians are unable to monitor whether we have launched an ICBM.
Good point. But what I think is really critical is you mentioned a point that, you know, they finally tell us now. Well, let me tell you the Canadian angle here. As I was listening to the MSNBC news of Brian Williams from Forrest is filling in.
Yes.
He told it as the lead story on his newscast. But then he brought in the guy, reporter from the Chicago Tribune who was going to do the story in the Chicago Tribune the next morning.
Yes.
Well, while this was happening, I was laughing because up here in Canada, a week before our big newscast on national television, the CBC National News,
yes,
broadcast the three-day break about a week before.
Huh.
So not only are you the last to know, but every other person in the world knows before you know. So if I were an American citizen, I'd be a little bit upset.
You're making a really good point, sir. I appreciate your call. Thank you. Yes. Yeah, not only are we the last to know, I mean, that's very serious. Isn't that interesting? I say again, of all of the Y2K problems that did not manifest themselves, you would think the two areas where we did get significant numbers of reports of problems are where? In the nuclear power industry, one, and in the defense intelligence industry. Industry, I'll call it an industry, that for 3 days we were nearly blind. All because of Y2K. Now, everybody's toaster seems to be doing okay, and VCRs, oh, they're trucking along. Even the majority of the PCs are okay. But in the two most critical areas a person could possibly imagine, they had trouble. That's worth a little thought. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art.
Hey.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
Hey, can we switch subjects for a little bit?
Anything you want.
Hey, let's talk lighthouses.
White houses?
Yeah, lighthouses on the Oregon. I'm living here on the Oregon coast.
No, you're saying lighthouses.
Lighthouses, yeah.
I'm okay.
Listening to KTBR. I'm out here in Roseburg.
Right.
And I like to say, boy, lighthouses saved us thousands and thousands of lives. And over here we have a... a seat ahead, and there's a ghost story there.
I wonder if lighthouses will ultimately be replaced by GPS.
Probably, but they'll always be lit. You know, they're all automated now, but they're really fast.
Well, we lost them. That's too bad. Lighthouses. I suppose there really is still a use for them, but as GPS becomes refined, and by the way, they actually had, our U.S. military actually introduced an error factor into GPS. As the private industrial companies that produce GPS receivers begin to correct for that error, which they're doing, by the way, and we get very precise readings, you may not need a lighthouse anymore. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Art Bell.
Turn off thy radio.
The radio's off.
Okay.
Art?
Yes.
I tried to get on when Linda Moulton Howe was on.
Yes.
But was not able to get on, of course. this global warming.
Yes.
This is all terrorism, and it's caused by AccuWeather ion weather. I have been trying to get to the FBI for 18 years.
By what now?
AccuWeather ion weather has been making our weather with chemicals. It's been more heavy in the last 20 years, but this started just after World War One, and this was started by the Nazis. And this has been picked up after World War II by the Italian real estate developers.
What? Why would the Italian real estate developers pick up Nazi technology to change the weather?
Well, the Italian real estate developers, they make the weather so that if they want a farm, they work like 5 to 10 years ahead of time. And when they want a certain area to build in, and now this is all over the United States. This is not just one place. They use single-engine planes spraying chemicals to make the weather. So if the farmer can't get rain, doesn't get any crops, and so therefore
somebody gets a farm. Yeah, I see. In other words, they drive you broke, and they get the farm. Well, it's conjecture right now about weather control. I thought very interesting conjecture about the chemtrails that we had last week. Very, very, very interesting. But I don't know about the Nazis and the Italians and the real estate people in Italy. I think the majority of the weather modification technology has been occurring right here in River City. As a matter of fact, the Air Force, as you know, made a statement that we will own the weather. Seems interesting statement to make, huh? Wild card line, you're on the air.
Hey, Art, how's it going?
Okay, it's going.
Okay, it's Missing Learjet Tim from Canada's premier F-18 fighter base, Cold Lake, Alberta, Canada.
Yes, sir.
I need a new label or something. I don't know. This is getting worn out, isn't it?
I don't know.
Hey, your poster's in the mail now. Listen, you have a spot on your wall in the radio room, don't you? Left? Just one spot?
Actually, it's getting pretty cluttered in here.
It is. It's only it's about 3 feet by 2. It is the ultimate alien poster. It's absolutely fantastic. I'm looking at it here because I bought two.
It would have to be awfully damn good to replace the Raider cheerleaders poster that was personally signed by the Raiders cheerleaders. Now, if you can top that, send it.
You're going to have it either tomorrow or Monday, but it's an alien poster. And it describes the only reason, the one and only reason they are here.
And that is?
They're only here for the beer.
The beer?
Yeah. You're going to put this baby up and put it on the cam if you've got a chance. But it's great. It's a fantastic picture.
All right, my friend. Thank you. I will accept and look at any posters, but all of them must compete for wall space with my Raiders cheerleaders poster. Actually, calendar. It has one cheerleader per month. And it's signed, Love So-and-So. To Art, Love So-and-So. Now, I don't know. Grays are all right. They're all right. But there are no Raiders cheerleader. I'll tell you that right now. I'm Art Bell. We'll be right back. This, of course, is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from January 13th, 2000.
Holding you is a warmth that I thought I could never find. Just trying to decide. I've seen visions of someone like you in my life.
Girl to hold in my arms and know the magic.
charms, 'cause I want girl to call my own. I want a dream lover so I don't have to dream alone. Dream lover, where are you? With a love oh so true and a hand that I can hold, feeling near as I grow old, 'cause I want girl to call my own. I want a dream lover.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from January 13th, 2000.
A couple of items of note here. One, the Associated Press says, the Census Bureau is now predicting the population of the U.S., that's here, is going to double in 100 years. That's double. Can you imagine what it's going to be like when the population in this country is double what it is right now? That's almost impossible to comprehend. That's what they're saying. Another AP story, and this one you might file away in your brain next time you get a speeding ticket. See if you can give it a shot. A filed from Oslo, Norway. Norwegians expressed outrage Thursday after a court reduced a millionaire sentence for speeding because of the high quality of his car. Fritz, his first name, 61 years of age, they give his last name, I wouldn't even try to pronounce that, was clocked by police at 88 miles per hour in a 50 mile per hour zone near the west coast town of Åsland, according to media reports. Under Norway's strict, and they have very strict traffic laws, that would normally be grounds for a mandatory jail sentence plus a fine. Prosecutors had argued that he should be jailed for at least 3 weeks. Instead, the local preliminary court reduced his sentence partly because he was driving, get this, a 350 horsepower Mercedes 500 SE. Quote, the driver was experienced and he was driving a car that handles well at high speed, the court said in its ruling Wednesday. It gave the man instead a suspended sentence and a $1,250 fine. The head of the National Traffic Police there called the ruling reprehensible, said, quote, I can't go along with someone getting reduced sentence just because he was driving a fancy car. The report said that the man probably won't even notice the fine. His taxable wealth last year was about $8.4 billion. So, the next time you get a ticket, if you're driving a Mercedes or something, note to the police officer that, look, you can speed because you've got a better car, it handles better at high speeds, and so why should you get a ticket? And then write me a note from jail and let me know how it worked out. By the way, maybe one of you can help me out there somewhere. Some years ago, I read a definitive study that said that ham radio operators, like me, have a much higher cancer rate because of their exposure to electromagnetic radiation. And if you have a copy of that or know where to get it, I would appreciate it if you would email it to me, that study. At artbell@mindspring.com. It's going to settle an argument for me that I'm having with somebody. Oh, by the way, this also Associated Press, but sent to me by my inside secret source at the flagship station of NBC in Los Angeles, KNBC, my secret source. The wacky warning label contest apparently has, the one that has taken top honors, is some lady in Michigan. No, I'm incorrect. Bonnie Hay of Plano, Texas, who discovered a label on her iron, an iron she had just bought, which said, never iron clothes while they are being worn. Never iron clothes while they are being worn. Now, how many of you just went, oh, my God, and all this time I've been doing that? How many of you? I bet not one. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Extinguish your radio, please.
Yes. Is this our bell?
Yes, it is.
I had two things.
All right.
You remember on New Year's Eve when you said that few people get to experience millennium change?
Yes.
I thought I'd point out to you, you're incorrect in that. If you realize...
that it doesn't begin until 2001.
No.
What?
There's more people alive right now than have ever lived. So not only do most people get to experience a millennial change, most people get to experience this millennium change.
Yeah, but as of the next millennium...
Oh, sure. In the future, it may change, but for right now...
Yeah, but I mean, when you think about... You get 100-year changes. You get a lot of people who live through those, at least. But you get very few, comparatively, in totality, that live through a 1,000-year change. I mean, that's just a fact.
Mathematically, that's not correct at this moment.
But it will.
When the population doubles, you'll be right.
Yes, that's right.
But at this time in the future. But I wanted to ask you...
I personally considered it a big honor to live to the year 2000.
I didn't disagree with you on that. That is a big honor. Let me ask you, I found something that you might be interested in a Esquire magazine, strangely enough.
Okay.
Have you heard about a machine called Z?
Z?
Yeah. They're trying to replicate, they're trying to create fusion and replicate the power of the sun. It's in the November issue of Esquire. It's called Voyage to the Sun.
Well, of course, fusion, real fusion, is the process they claim is going on the sun. So if they could replicate that, then we would have quite an energy source, wouldn't we?
Well, here's the scary thing they're doing. They're saying the same things they were saying when they set off the first nuclear bomb, like, I hope we don't destroy the world.
I know. They're also trying to create what they call a mini Big Bang. And that one worries me as well. In other words, what is a mini Big Bang? The Big Bang, they tell us, created all that is. Our planet, our system, our sun, and all of the suns and all of the planets that you can see twinkling at night. All of that came from the Big Bang. So they're going to try to create a mini Big Bang. And you've got to imagine that even a mini Big Bang could take out our planet, the other planets, our sun, and so much more, and still be considered mini. But they're going to push that button anyway. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Oh, hi, Art. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Hey, I have two things. One about Russia. This first one about... Have you read the BBC articles lately about the pressure on the Pope to step down?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, the first one, if I get a chance, I could fax them over. The first one broke on the 2nd of January, and that came out that there was, you know, rumors that were circulating in the Vatican that there's been pressure on the Pope because of his age, obviously, you know, to step down.
Yes.
Then the next week, what happened was, or actually this week, was this bishop in Germany came out publicly. Now, this is unheard of. And, you know, he questioned the Pope's, you know, ability to run the Vatican. And there was a big, huge uproar. Well, today, another article. It's like, you know, they're kind of setting up the pace. And today they came out with an article that said, you know, most likely after he does his Jubilee 2000 ceremonies, that it looks like he's going to just step down. It reminded me of Father Malachi Martin. Because can you just imagine the machinations and the political maneuvering going around in the Vatican?
Yes, I can.
It could be. And you mentioned the Russians at the beginning of the show. about the glitches in the missile defense system?
Glitches, hell. There's 5 to 7 hours every day now. They've lost so many satellites that they can't even monitor whether we have launched against them. Can you imagine how dangerous that is?
Yeah, exactly, because when you were kind of mentioning that, I came across this article from the Guardian, Russia Raises Its Nuclear Threat. I think I faxed it to you. Anyway, Putin's coming out tomorrow with this new military today. It's going to be published today. When you read this thing, it's exactly a 180-degree turn. Now, remember those rumors that Russia was now going to use their nuclear missiles in a conventional war?
Yes.
Well, now that's in this doctrine, that's a fact now. And the new president, whoever it is, has to go along with it because that's the way they constructed this doctrine. And now another piece of wording in it, to me this is Cold War too. It says, there'll be mutually exclusive tendencies are now locked in combat on the globe, meaning the West against them.
Yeah.
You know, you can't read it any other way.
Yeah, there's a change underway in Russia right now, and they're moving in reverse, and we're probably going to have another Cold War.
Yeah, I think I mean, when you get a chance to read the facts, it's right there in black and white.
All right. I'll look for it. Thank you very much. And, you know, I really don't know what to do about Russia's inability to monitor a launch from North America. They're pretty paranoid in Russia. And this is pretty scary stuff. Should we launch satellites and give them the satellites? Well, they wouldn't trust us anyway. Plus, who the hell wants to spend money for Russia's defense against us? But on the other hand, it's really, really, really dangerous for them not to know that we are not launching. You know, should there be some sort of launch from somewhere, say, in Scandinavia that they misread? Well, you know how it goes. East of the Rocky, do the wild thing at 775-727-1295. Ron, we're not allowed to give last names out on the air.
Okay. Well,
so let's begin again because I had to take that out.
That'll work. Okay, this is Ron from Fayetteville.
There you go.
I called you during the hurricane we had come through here.
Oh, I remember indeed. What a report you gave.
6 cats, my girlfriend, and a dog, and we all survived it.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Also, I tried to get on when Linda Maltenow was on. From what I understand, the warming that we're going through is artificially induced, and actually the global wobble of the axis is headed towards another ice age.
Well, that's a theory. Yeah. I mean, but how are we artificially doing it? Unless it's the Italian real estate guys.
More concrete means more heat reflected back into the atmosphere, blah, blah, blah. Cutting down oxygenating trees.
Well, sure. In other words, man has a hand in this. Course he does. But I, you know what? I think it's the smaller. In other words, I think there are cyclical climate changes that occur, and ice cores show us that we may be contributing to it, but I think we're only a small part of it.
True. They did a computer model here a while back where when you have a global warming trend, the rain patterns move farther and farther north away from the equator and farther
right.
south away from the equator.
Right.
And it seems to me that's what's happening now.
It is. And so you get droughts in some areas and drenched in others.
There were two other things. I'd heard you talk about chemtrails and contrails for a long time. My girlfriend and I went to Michigan to visit her family. On the way back, we were passing through Cincinnati, Ohio, where Wright-Patterson is.
Right.
It's just about sundown, and I'm looking out of the car window to the west, right, watching this beautiful sunset.
Mm-hmm.
And I started looking, and I noticed that some of the clouds were picking up sunlight and reflecting it and giving a prismatic effect more so than others.
That's right.
I looked, and I swear, Art, as I live and breathe, there was a crisscross pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Of trails.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
right.
I was like, with my own eyes.
Well, oh no, the chemtrails are there. The only question, sir, is what are they? There's no doubt about the fact they're there. Contrails are not what they used to be. Otherwise said, we have some chemtrails now. Some of them are obviously chemicals being induced into the atmosphere for, well, you fill in the blank. We've got lots of theories. And I think the only thing, as we said last week, that is going to settle this is to go to altitude and get a sample and bring it down and analyze it and see what the hell's in that stuff. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Yes.
Yeah, I just want to suggest a piece of bumper music for you.
Okay.
Which would be, it's called Small Faces, Ichigo Park.
Let's see, Ichigo Park.
By the Small Faces. It's a Rod Stewart.
Yeah, I remember it well.
It doesn't have any phasing in it, but it has this real interesting flare drum effect.
Are you sure? Ichigo Park did have phasing.
I don't think it's phasing. I think it's what they call flare drums.
I've got a copy of Ichigo Park here somewhere, and if I can find it, I'll put it on. I'm almost positive it's phased.
Is it phased? Because I was told that it was set up somehow with how they do in a big chamber, a big tile room or something to make the drums sound that way.
I guess anything is possible, but yeah.
That might be an interesting one for you since you like that phasing sound.
Right. I don't know what it is about it that I like either. I can't quite make up my mind what it is, but there's something exotic about it.
Yeah, it's interesting.
That I've always enjoyed.
It's interesting. And the drums are real, they're real interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
All right.
Welcome back from the Big Apple.
Thank you very much, and take care.
You too.
And the one thing I would say about New York is, if you haven't been to New York in a long time, and you go, it's going to blow your mind. They have really cleaned up Manhattan. I mean, it's like a whole new place. It's unbelievable from the last time I was there. Just truly unbelievable. I don't know how they did it. They must have been done a year at a time, and I don't know, I guess the political leadership somehow in Manhattan. In fact, it would be an interesting story. Maybe somebody out there really knows. Somehow encouraged, the various building owners and street vendors. I mean, you see people cleaning up now during the day. It's just an entirely different kind of place. It's just absolutely amazing. If you see it, if you've seen it 10 or 20 years ago and see it again, it will blow your mind. It was kind of a proud moment, frankly, to see Manhattan in the shape it's in now. It really is an amazing city, rivaling, in my opinion, some of the very clean, beautiful European cities that you can see. Like Paris, for example, is just absolutely awesome. It's clean. And, I kind of came back from Paris once wondering why we couldn't do that here. Well, we have done it now in Manhattan. And it's a pretty pleasing thing to see. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, Art, this is Marty from Arlington, Texas.
Hello there, Marty.
How you doing? I'm okay. Glad you're back, and I hope you didn't get the flu.
Well, time will tell.
I just want to let you know that on the ABC affiliate in Dallas, Texas, they had a report on the news about the flying triangle.
Oh, yes.
They covered it as they were saying it was the new stealth. But the picture was taken by the Norwegian pilots over the Atlantic. And that's all I had. Thanks, Art.
All right, thank you. Well, it's stealth, all right. It doesn't make any noise. It doesn't fly. It's capable of actually floating. If that's the new stealth, then, boy, we've really got ourselves a craft, I'll tell you. That's some kind of craft. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Art. This is John from New York, listening on WPHT Philadelphia.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, shame on WABC for the tyranny of their call screeners Monday night. I was the second to last caller when you were on Sean Hannity's show.
Yes.
And those people were so desperate to get anti-Art Bell callers on the air, it was nauseating. Another quick word about the Jumbotron at number one Times Square.
Yes.
I take the ABC network coverage, and they might have deleted the NBC logo.
Wait a minute. Hold it. It was CBS that did it.
Right, but as I was looking at it, I know that NBC has their logo up there because they pay big money to do it.
I know.
Now
yeah.
I'm going to have to go back because I didn't notice that NBC logo up there when they were doing their shots of number one Times Square.
Ooh.
I'm going to have to check that videotape.
Yeah,
great appearance on Sean Hannity. Sliwa was soft, and and you handled, and Matt Lauer was a lot tougher than Sliwa thought he was going to be.
I was actually trying to get Sean to come at me.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I said it really on the air. I'm sure you heard it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, come on, let's get into this a little bit. I mean, I know he's, I know the way, for example, he feels about global warming, and I wanted to get into that with him, but they wanted
all things considered, it was a confrontational and an interesting appearance.
That's what I thought, too. I appreciate your call, sir.
Thank you, Art.
Take care. And by the way, if you want to hear the WABC interview, Keith Rowland, my webmaster, alertly, because there are no archives, captured it and put it up on my website so you can hear it. And about halfway through, you will hear Curtis Sliwa, whose picture, by the way, I will have up tomorrow night. Also, Curtis didn't know it, but I defiled his little beret before he got there. It was hanging out there in the hall. Tomorrow we'll have photographs. Anyway, tonight, you all have a good one. Tomorrow night, we're going to have a CIA operative on the air. That's right, the CIA. So prepare thyself. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Good night.